Welcome to Drukhama Radio. For the sake of clarity, the person referred to as Raz in these podcasts is one of the main teachers of Drukhama teachings, referred to more commonly as Daishi, which simply means old teacher. We hope you enjoy this free content and find some of the material useful to enhance your life and the lives of those around you. Blessings.
Welcome back to Drukhama Radio. I'm Adam, thrilled again to be joined tonight by Raz. Raz, how are you doing, brother?
Very good, as always. Thanks for having me. Appreciate it. And I'm excited about our discussion.
Yeah, I'm excited too. We are going to kind of dovetail off last week where we talked about happiness and bliss relative to some of the lower egoic things, the idea of, you know, finding it at work, in life, in physical activity, in sex. And we are going to move to the upper realms, you know, more your wheelhouse here. We are going to talk about reallocation of energy. We're going to talk about movement energy, prana, and get into just really how someone on the path can find and maintain balance and bliss while they are practicing. So that's what I'm going to start with tonight. And that's what I'm going to have you riff on initially. You have a practitioner that is wanting to put themselves in a place of peace and a place of bliss. What are their first steps?
So that's a great question. But most importantly, I think we have to look at how does it happen? How do I get bliss from something that isn't outside of me? Which is really interesting because normally a human being is not used to achieving any kind of happiness, joy, contentment, or bliss unless there is a circumstance. And that is different when we get to a certain place on the path. What happens instead is that circumstances are generated within us through our will. In other words, we want to be in a state of ecstasy. We move energy a certain way and ecstasy ensues. We want to be in a state of peacefulness or contentedness. We move energy a certain way and contentedness ensues. And this is a fantastic way to live for obvious reasons. I don't think I have to go into why that's a great way to live, but this is obviously a place in the path where once we have learned how to eliminate the entanglements to that egoic identity. And as we've always said, we'll still use the identity, we'll still use the ego. It's still very helpful for the world. It's helpful to communicate and relate with others and so on. But without the entanglements there, as we begin to shave away those entanglements, we also begin to learn how to utilize energy. And when we can use energy in greater degrees, in greater strength, when we get access, that when the latent energy within our body becomes activated, we can then direct that energy in different ways. And this is really where the psychological/spiritual practice ends and the mystical, metaphysical/spiritual practice begins. So there is a huge amount of people on the other side of that fence that do psychological spirituality. In other words, they sit, they meditate, and they have more balanced emotions, and they can speak better or apply this to their work or their relationships. And then the esoteric or the inner or the secret practices of mysticism are something that are not as readily used. And that's where we get into inner energy. And that energy comes from a latent place within the body that gets worked on specifically and opened up or extracted or explodes so that I can begin to have access to a greater degree of energy. And if I have access to that energy and I learn how to utilize it correctly, I can apply it to things like contentedness, peacefulness, blissfulness, and I can go into incredible states of rapture through this energy. So that really is where the mystical part of the path or the esoteric part of the path really begins.
We could do a whole show, honestly, diving more into energy because there's a lot, lot that goes on with that. But I'm going to ask you, when a practitioner begins shifting and metamorphosis, if you will, why does it seem that things that used to, you know, bring them bliss, joy, whatever, they almost are reevaluated and in some case turned 180 to where they become almost avoided, whether it's food, whatever it is?
I like to think of it as a maturation. So in the same way, and I think I've used this example between you and I, as we've talked in the past and with many other practitioners, when you're a little kid and you're out in the schoolyard, you'll go into the sandbox and you'll build castles and play with your friends, and you will just have the time of your life in that sandbox. It will be the funnest time. You'll enjoy it. It'll be fantastic. But as you grow a little bit, this sandbox no longer satiates your desire for exploration and experience. You've done it. You've been there. For whatever reason, sandbox didn't do it. So now I'm going to grow up and go after other things. And then it becomes, you know, music, or as a teenager it becomes, you know, girls or boys or movies and music and, you know, all this other thing. Then as an adult, it becomes money and family, friends, social status, later control and knowledge and all these things. We keep striving to find what is going to fulfill this itch. And inevitably, once we cross the barrier that we enter into that stream state of that spiritual perception and begin to understand that all of this energy resides within us, we basically get rid of or let go of the external things. Not that we still can't enjoy them. We can. The world is a beautiful place. And being with others can be a much more intense and exciting experience. There's no question about that at all. But once I know how to work with that energy and that energy has become activated within me, then a whole new realm of sandbox playing begins. And typically you'll see that the practitioner will begin to just go crazy with, wow, all the stuff I can do with this energy. I mean, I'm awake in my dreams and I'm able to send energy up certain channels and I'm able to experience really intense, blissful states of samadhi and so on and so forth. This is great. So they begin to play with the energy, for lack of a better word. And there are also degrees to that. There are also stages to that until inevitably higher degrees come and the energy is used for other purposes and so on and so forth. So once that barrier is passed, once they've crossed the river and they've let go of the worldly stuff, in other words, okay, the world's not really going to do it, but this stuff is, now I have access to the buttons that actually control how I feel, then they let go of most of the stuff in the world naturally. And it just comes. So in that way, Adam, as I've said so many times, we don't have to have coercion. We shouldn't have to force ourselves to not do certain things dogmatically, to not think certain things, to not feel certain things. The way that we act and perceive the world will change automatically as soon as we get that energy moving. We don't have to coerce any of that.
It almost feels to some degree like it's cyclical, like you begin this path and you move so far away from these things that used to define you. And you enjoyed them, but in the end, it's impossible that you end up back at a place where you still enjoy these things and you find bliss in them and enjoyment, but it's just, it's more of an in it, not of it scenario, and you have zero invested.
It's funny because in truth, what happens is we go from the outside and we struggle in the outside and we go through this strife and suffering and trouble. We don't know who we are, what we are, how we think, how we function, all and on. Then we go past this sort of stream entry. We sort of go into a space of spiritual clarity. We then go within. We only want to be within. We want to explore within. And inevitably what happens is we go through this process of breaking open the channels in the body until we inevitably go back out into the world again. And we enjoy the world in a whole new way. We enjoy the world without any investment in it because we're gone, because the egoic investor is gone. You can go out in the world and enjoy all of it. So you can enjoy the relationships without neediness. You can enjoy the people of the world in all of their different ways and the ways that they act, the things that they do in the world. You can kind of see their level of growth and understand them completely and have better compassion for them, better connection with them. And then, oddly enough, you've gone from the world to inner, and then back out. And suddenly everything is about the external world, and it becomes a lot more fun, a lot more productive, a lot more exciting, and just a lot more interesting, because now when things are happening, I don't really have investments in outcomes, and I can enjoy anything that's going on regardless of what potentially comes of it.
I want to pivot from that to give you a chance to talk a little bit about pranic energy and the role that that plays in finding, balancing, sustaining bliss and contentment here.
Well, the thing that most people don't understand is that We are filled with life force energy. I mean, obviously, you know, there's something beating our heart. There's something causing synapses in the brain. There is something that causes the cells, which are individuals, to touch and communicate and to talk to each other, the nerve tendrils and the endocrine system and the muscles. And, you know, we like to reduce this to a biological function. I've heard scientists in particular explain it as, you know, you're just a bundle of nerves and good luck. And I understand that completely. If that's true, that we are nothing more than a bundle of nerves, then I would like to make that bundle of nerve experience as fun as possible. I would like it to be as happy as possible. I'd like other people to be as happy as possible too. So regardless about the philosophy, regardless about whatever concepts we want to dream up about it and discuss and argue about, the bottom line is your experience. To me, I don't care about any of that. The past, I don't care about the future. I don't care about historical traditions. And what I care about is, how are you doing now? How do you feel now? How's life treating you now, right? And that's really what's important to me. In order for us to be able to control the way that we experience and the liveliness that we have, we've got to learn how this thing, this instrument that we have, is working within, how it functions, and if I have the ability to take control of it or not. If I don't, we're screwed. We're at the whim of the cosmos. Good luck. We're all done. But if we have the ability, and my contention is that we absolutely do, to adjust and amplify and work with the energy that's residing within us, we have a tremendous opportunity to live in a very amazing experiential way that can be contented or peaceful or blissful or anything we want it to be. And that kind of freedom is very powerful. So to understand the prana within the body, in my opinion, is the key, absolutely the key to a mystical system.
When you have practitioners that are anyone on that spiritual path, and they have taken that turn where they are doing that internalizing we spoke about last week, that's not overly fun, it can be very difficult to see a light at the end of the tunnel. It can be very difficult to see a sliver of light. So what are your thoughts, practical applications, practices, whatever you might have in your pocket to give someone who is feeling like they have a map, but lost? You know, you understand like the duality of that. I feel like I know where I'm going, but I can't see anything around me.
Absolutely. And this is the very reason that if somebody wants to try to learn how to operate the system within, that they go find an experienced teacher that's already learned the system. If they don't do that, it's going to be a rough road, because one of the first things we have to do on this kind of adventure is to acknowledge that we're going to have to let go of the safety net that we call ourselves. That's not a bad thing. And in fact, that leads to a beautiful thing in truth. But we're going to have to realize that it's going to feel very scary, and it's going to be extremely difficult. It's going to cause major bumps in our proverbial road of life, and we're going to need support for that. It is by no means a smooth and happy butterflies and balloons path. You're going to have trouble, and you're going to need someone to help you up when you fall down, for sure. Once we understand that most of the problems that are being brought up are being brought up by the very thing we're trying to detangle from, which is that ego story mind, which is the processor that wants to develop all these kinds of abstractions and undulate all these stories that are constantly riveting through our minds. Once we understand that that's the problem maker, then we can easily say, you're starting problems again, back up and just take a breath, stay present and understand that this too shall pass, like any rhythm does. But you're still going to need help, because until you cross that river, until you actually enter the place where that latent energy is activated within you, you're not going to have the strength or that energy strength to really overcome that. So it's going to be battling you a lot. And that's really where an expert or a teacher comes into play to help you navigate that, for sure.
You mentioned rhythm, and I have that down in notes here. And I wanted to discuss that, because as we make these changes, as we progress, as you go through that process, you're going to be smacked in the face with these rhythms. And maybe they've always been there, but you're just no longer throwing external blame out. That's not really relevant to the point that I'm getting at here with you. It's tough for someone beginning this path to look at that and see the bliss or the bright in that. So what would you say to a practitioner that's just absolutely getting smacked like waves with rhythms that's just beating them down? And they're in that place where it doesn't feel like there's really any way up.
There's a number of approaches here, but typically what we want to do is the minute that somebody feels that rhythm and that they say, you know, I'm just overwhelmed with negativity. And remember, that comes in a lot of different ways. Sometimes the negativity can come consciously. In other words, it's a story that I can identify with. In other words, I'm thinking of a story or my mind is generating a story and I'm associating with that story and it's hurting me or causing me trouble emotionally. That's an easy one to see. Sometimes it happens unconsciously. In other words, I just feel terrible and I don't know why. I just feel like my vitality is low, or I feel sad for some reason, or apathetic, or I'm depressed. Any number of emotions could be coming up and we can't point to anything. There isn't a situation out in the world that I can point to, and there isn't a story in my mind I can point to. The most important thing when either of these two circumstances come up is to realize, to tell yourself right away. And one of the easiest ways, because there's some advanced ways, and that we go over kind of more in the group process, and there's some easy ways. One of the easy ways is to simply sit down and say, okay, this too shall pass. Be with what's happening. Don't fight and don't flight, because anytime you fight with or run from whatever's happening, you're simply just asking that rhythm to come back again, because the rhythm is showing you something you need to address, you need to be in, you need to accept. So once it comes up, sit down and say, I feel X. I feel, you know, depressed, angry, whatever it is. Wait for it. Find where that energy is inside of you. Literally point it out. So if I'm depressed or if I'm angry, show me. Where is it? Go within and try to figure out where is exactly this anger? Where is this depression? And as you're searching for it, trying to find it, really one particular place that it exists. In other words, it's a phantom concept. It doesn't really exist in and of itself. It's tied to a story, whether you see it consciously or not. And once you start to look for it, you'll realize, well, there is no such thing called depression. And now that I'm looking for it, it's not in my spleen, it's not in my knee, it's not in my elbow. I don't know where this is. That will help you instantly realize, well, I guess I'm really not depressed. And then it will lead to what we go through, an insight process where we can actually figure out, okay, what happened exactly. So sit down, be in whatever you're feeling, and then locate it. Tell yourself, this too shall pass. What goes up must come down. I'm depressed now, but I'm going to be happy in a minute or an hour or a half hour. It always happens that way. The rhythm always goes up and down. But then locate it. Locate where this is. And when I say locate, I don't mean it's in my stomach, because that's where you're physically feeling it because you happen to be cringing your abdomen because you're afraid, right? Or something like that. I'm talking about really where's the source of it. The moment you start searching, you'll see it's not there. You'll help wipe it away. You can become present, and then you can say, okay, you know what? Really, there's nothing there. I'm okay. Everything's fine. And you can go on and allow the rhythm to swing the other direction, and then realize through these rhythms that you're slowly making corrections and helping yourself get closer to that latent energy explosion, which comes as the path continues.
My last question about this is something that I'm sure a lot of people going through this have had issues with and have dealt with. And so I kind of want to talk about those slip back rhythms, or the almost like a trigger rhythm. We all have things, okay?
Yeah.
Whatever they buttons might be. Exactly. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And they are, unfortunately, the rhythms that are going to keep smacking you in the face.
That's right.
But they are exponentially more difficult to deal with. And everybody has got one or two. And I've seen people on some of the deepest stages of this still butting their head up against this, you know, almost like it's that final piece, that final barrier or whatever that you have to bust through.
Yeah.
You know, I guess one, how does someone go about identifying those? And two, what would your advice be? Because I have dealt with those. I've talked with people who have dealt with those. And it's really easy when you're not in the midst of them to identify them and say, well, this really shouldn't be that big a deal, right?
Yep.
You can talk objectively with someone and say, well, I'm just not going to let this bother me. But then when it goes red, you know, and the lights are flashing, it's really easy to slip back, almost like an alcoholic slipping back, you know, near a bar or something.
Absolutely. And you're talking about deep-seated unconscious karmic seeds, right? So these are issues that you have not dealt with at all. And they happen to be sore spots that if you bring these up, you discuss, or something reminds you or pushes this particular quote unquote button, that you almost get completely taken over by it. You do not have the strength to overcome the power of the energy that comes up. And this is why I say, really, everything that gives us strength is the level of light that we have within the body. And when I say light, I don't mean a woo-woo word. I mean that pranic energy that comes from the latent Shakti, that kind of kundalini energy that we drive up and up and up. Actually, what it's doing is giving us a stronger conscious ability to be above these kinds of buttons, these kinds of pressure points. When we're not above them in this strength, in this light, in this energy, they're going to assault us and we don't have any hope against it. It's a David and Goliath thing. We just don't have the sling to fight back in this particular instance. And I'll put it to you like this. It's an interesting thing you said. You said that sometimes if we sit down and talk about it, it's no big deal. We can talk about it. We can see how silly it is or how we should overcome it, or it's something that's not that big of a deal. And, you know, it's really kind of something that shouldn't take me over. But then in another instance, another circumstance, if that button's touched a certain way, all control's lost and it's completely engulfed you. The interesting part about that is, what's really different between when you're sitting talking about it openly and the button's pushed, right? What is that trigger? How does that trigger get untriggered? How do we take the button away completely? The button will go away the moment we have enough conscious strength to fully allow it to express itself, because these deep-seated buttons are like volcanoes. They want to absolutely express while you're remaining utterly conscious and aware of it. And what happens is they are expressing now, but you're not able to be consciously aware through it. In other words, it takes you over and you go unconscious and start having unconscious reactions and all kinds of stuff. The minute the prana gets strong enough within your body, you will be able to overcome, watch it, and be conscious. And once you do that, the button is gone. And the reason why is because the universe is perfect in this way. When something doesn't serve you any longer, in other words, when it doesn't push you to become more conscious, when it's not angsting you to become more conscious and you've overcome it, it does not need to return again. So the minute that you're able to consciously ride through and allow this volcano to go up while you just simply are there watching it, you will rid yourself of it permanently. But like you said, if you do not have that pranic strength, the whole point of this particular podcast, then it's going to assault you and it's going to come up again and again and keep assaulting you. So the change is your pranic strength. The pranic degree of light that's going within your body has to increase so that you're able to overcome the strength of the buttons, the karmic seeds, whatever you want to call them. But these little things that are hiding unconsciously that come up that just sweep us over and take us over, we need more strength, and that comes from light. And that light is directly related to that latent pranic energy. And that's why we teach how to get it, how to build it up, how to prepare for it, how to utilize it correctly. And that, at the point of that heightened pranic strength, allows you to overcome all instances of these buttons until none of them remain.
I will say, from my experience, it seems that oftentimes those trigger rhythms are multi-tiered, in that what I think is making me angry initially is not really what I'm grabbing onto. And when you do get that chance to sit back and delve through it, so often it stems from fear versus being upset because someone walks up and punches you in the face or whatever when you're moving along this path. What you're looking at initially is not even really what bothers you.
Absolutely right. And you know that because you've had strong enough contemplation to kind of dig deeper beneath the layers. And a lot of practitioners have had the ability to do that. And that's really important. But most people don't have that ability. They see that, you know, this person made me angry because they said something that was rude. But really, when you look deeper, it's always going to go down to something much more subtle and something much more covert. And that's part of that insight practice as well. And that, as you said, goes way beyond this 20-minute podcast.
All right. Well, as we wrap up, brother, do you have any final thoughts?
Well, speaking about pranic strength, everything that we have within us is basically just the ability to be aware, conscious, bright, light. Our strength comes from what turns us on. And what I mean by that is what gives us the ability to cognize, to rationalize, to be aware. That energy that makes us on, that makes us aware of ourselves, of our process, of our brain, of our body, of our emotions, that is a source that we can tap into. That prana, that energy is a source we can tap into if we understand the path. And once we get tapped into that energy, which is a great esoteric secret, we can utilize that energy to overcome exactly what we were talking about in this particular show, which is all of the reactionary underlying karmic seeds, or the buttons as we call them, so that they no longer interfere with anything we do in our lives. And that alone, never mind all the ancillary applications of prana, that alone is a phenomenal, beautiful way to live.
Wonderful stuff. Please, everyone listening, if you take 5 minutes and just rate and review on iTunes, we really appreciate it. You can check out all the materials available at drukhama.com, and feel free to reach out to us with questions or comments at radio@drukhama.com. It's in the show notes. Roz, you're so generous with your time, brother. Thank you for being here tonight.
Thanks so much, Adam. I always love being here. Thanks for doing the show. I appreciate it so much.
It's my pleasure, and I'm really glad that people are drawn to it, and you know, hope that it is impactful on some level for them. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Take care. We will talk to you soon, and until then, be well.
If you have enjoyed this podcast and wish to find out more information on these teachings, please come and visit us at our website, drukhama.com. That's drukama.com.